get the meaning behind the numbers, and more.
Do you think sometimes players in this day and age, because they've grown up reading and listening and all this stuff about puck possession, sometimes they just won't make that simple play?
Absolutely. The ultimate example are the Chicago Blackhawks. Watch what they do when they have to strangle the life out of a game. They get it out, they get it in. They don't give up odd man rushes, they don't allow stretch passes. They're professional winners for a reason. They don't care about those individual possession stats. They care about winning games and getting Stanley Cup rings.
This is TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, the voice of hockey.
Yes, welcome to another edition of TSN Hockey Analytics here on TSN 1050 Toronto, TSN 1200 Ottawa. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes and SoundCloud. I'm Andy McNamara. Give us a follow on Twitter at TSN Analytics, myself at AndyMC81. Great show for you today. We have Travis Yost and Scott Colliner, terrific hockey analytics writers from TSN.ca, as well as editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto, James Myrtle. Our special guest, Jeff Vallette, managing editor of The Nation Network and site editor of The Leafs Nation, will also be by. But in his usual spot to kick things off, it is Mr. Travis Yost. Travis, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Andy?
Good stuff, buddy. Yeah, doing all right. Let's break down this age-old question first. And you wrote about it this week. What makes a Stanley Cup contender? Go.
Well, I can answer it in one sentence. No, I do. So the interesting look at this is, I think a lot of the time, at least old notion of what a Stanley Cup contender is a team that is just incredibly talented defensively and gets timely goal scoring. Like, usually that's the mantra around these teams. But if you look, and I'm talking the modern era, basically since 2007 or so, since the last lockout, really. If you look at it, and you look at every single team that's won the Stanley Cup, there's two commonalities across all of these teams that have won the Stanley Cup. One, they always have excellent goaltending. So it's either, I think one of the last nine Stanley Cup winners had average goaltending in the regular season, and that team, by the way, started getting incredible goaltending when the playoffs started. That was the 2009-2010 Chicago Blackhawks.
Right.
The other piece, though, that I found really interesting was a common thread across all Stanley Cup winning teams is that they generate an ungodly amount of shots. They generate shots more than they suppress shots against, which is interesting because that kind of goes against the grain of, like, defense wins championships. It would almost make you think that offense wins championships.
Sure.
The average rank, if you ranked every single Stanley Cup team in their respective year at how well they were generating shots, you would have between about the third and fourth best shot-generating team every single year winning the Stanley Cup. So now that's an average. So sometimes it would have been the best team in the league at that year generating shots. Sometimes it would have been the fifth or sixth best team. But the general gist of it is that these teams are all high-end elite, stay in the offensive zone, live in the offensive zone, generate shot after shot after shot, after scoring chance, and score a ton of goals. It was a really interesting exercise for me because I've always looked at it as sort of in the same vein, like, hey, look, you want a well-rounded team, you need a great defensive team too. But generally, what the guiding principles for a Stanley Cup winning team are, live in the offensive zone and get great goaltending. You got those two things, you are likely a Stanley Cup contender.
So, Travis, that being said, how many teams are there right now in the NHL that you think should be considered as cup contenders?
This was the other fun thing that I did. So I looked at this year, and I'm like, if you just looked at teams that really generated shots well and had great goaltending, who would be legitimate Stanley Cup contenders? So you had a couple of the obvious ones. Washington would look great. Pittsburgh would look great. But then as you kind of worked down the list, there were a couple of interesting teams. They're like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of them. So Montreal, I think everyone would have said, yeah, well, duh, Carey Price and net.
Sure.
But Montreal is also exceptional at generating shots in the offensive zone, regardless of whether it was in the beginning of the year when they were winning like crazy or even when they went through that ugly goal-scoring drought under Michel Therrien before they hired Claude Julien. They generate a ton of shots. They look a lot more like Pittsburgh and Washington than many other teams do. The other end of the spectrum, a couple teams that didn't really fit the bill, Minnesota. So Minnesota's gotten pretty strong goaltending this year, but not a ton of scoring chances they generate at 5-on-5. They were sort of towards the bottom end. New York Rangers, too. They've kind of had a weird season. So, like, I don't expect Henrik Lundqvist to keep playing the way he has, especially in the first half of the year. Like, their goaltending should be fine. But even if their goaltending was fine, they still are struggling so much offensively. They're getting timely scoring. Like, they are making the most of their chances, but they just don't have the requisite volume that a lot of teams need to, especially when the competition increases and teams are so much better defensively and teams have so much better goaltending. You really need to win on volume. And I don't know that the New York Rangers are a very good team, but I don't know that they exemplify it the way like a Pittsburgh or a Washington does.
Well, speaking of the Rangers, so you have Henrik Lundqvist out 2 to 3 weeks with a lower body injury. Now, you expect if he returns healthy and everything for the playoffs, that's fine. What do you think that impact does him being out of commission for that length of time? You know, if it's 3 weeks, sometimes it could turn even into a month. Playoff-wise, I would think, look, they got that top wildcard spot pretty well locked up. You got the Islanders, Leafs, kind of Tampa Bay, and they're over 10 points ahead of them right now. So I would think a playoff spot isn't in question, but to have Lundqvist gone for that period of time, does that do anything leading into the playoffs?
I don't know. I mean, it could go either way, and I hate to not have a great take about this, but sometimes I think you can make the argument that players benefit from rest.
Look,
the Spurs-Warriors game tonight, not to pivot for a second, but I'm pretty sure the top, like, seven players on either team are not playing today. And Popovich and Kerr are no dummies. Like, that day of rest is going to be – I mean, there are a couple injuries sprinkled in there, too. But, like, rest is meaningful. And, yes, this is not the type of rest you want. You don't want a guy that's recovering from injury. But at the same time, like, we've seen goaltenders play 65, 66, 67 games in a regular season. And then when the playoffs hit – they're not as productive, and maybe you're trying to tease out randomness there and trying to make a story out of nothing, but you do have to worry about workload, like especially when those goaltenders very frequently, especially in the offseason, they'll say, yeah, I played a ton. Like, I didn't feel great at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I could see this going either way, and surely he will benefit to some degree, at least mentally, from this break, because Henrik Lundqvist has been, you know, generational goaltending talent. He's been great every year. This is the first year and really more a decade at least that he has not been a top two or top three goaltender in the league. So I almost wonder if he would personally, even though he doesn't want the injury, he might like the reset idea, come back ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, maybe a bit burnt out. We'll have to wait and see. In conversation with Travis Yost from TSN.ca on Twitter, at Travis Yost. Let's get into Patrick Laine here. Scoring machine in his rookie year. But is he one-dimensional, Travis? Is he a scorer and that's it?
No, absolutely not. I will fight anyone. I know Toronto Radio carries this. And look, I'm the biggest, one of the biggest Austin Matthews fans in the world. But like, I bristle when I hear that the Calder Trophy discussion isn't a discussion. Like, it's just Matthews to win. Because the more I look at this, the more I think Patrick Laine has a very good argument.
Okay.
The argument is this. Patrick Laine is maybe one of the best rookie goal scorers we've seen in a decade. So let's put that aside for a second. Okay, we know everyone concedes that Laine is a great goal scorer. The other piece that I see that really benefits Laine is that his teammates are such fantastic goal scorers when he's on the ice. And then when they move away from Laine and play with someone else, they're not great goal scorers. And I really do think that speaks to an underrated playmaking ability. To kind of give you some light on this, Patrick Laine's line mates, whether it's Ehlers, Scheifele, he's played a ton of minutes with Dustin Byfuglien as his common defenseman, but he's played with Matthew Perreault as well. They shoot around 12% at 5-on-5, which is honestly ridiculous over the first six games. They shoot about 12% when Laine is playing with them. When Laine is not playing with them, and this is over more than 1,000 shots, they shoot about 6%. Like, I don't think that's totally noise, right? Like, and
no.
One of the things I look back on, in an argument I've consistently made, is that Laine reminds me most of Ilya Kovalchuk. And if you look at Ilya Kovalchuk's decade of playing experience in the NHL, and you did the same exact analysis with Kovalchuk, and you said, give me every single player that Kovalchuk played with, tell me how they shot with Kovalchuk on the ice and how they shot without Kovalchuk on the ice, his frequent teammates, Ilya Kovalchuk's, shot a full percentage point better with him on the ice. And this is over 1,000 shots than when Kovalchuk was off the ice and they were playing with somebody else. I think a lot of the times what we do, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, is once a guy is so good at one thing, in this case, Laine being an unbelievable sniper, like he's a pure thoroughbred goal scorer, I think we sometimes say, oh, that's what he is. And I think we kind of do him a disservice, because if you watch him in the offensive zone, he's a fantastic passer. And he's also pretty tough to knock off the puck, too. He's not just a guy who's sitting at the circle blasting one-timers. Like, he can distribute almost as well as he can score goals. And one of the big arguments, I think, in favor of Laine is, look, even if you concede that Austin Matthews is a better defensive player and has played with weaker line mates, I don't think either of those should be in dispute. Laine is scoring 3.5 goals per 60 minutes at 5-on-5, him and his teammates. The only player with numbers better than that, Jason Zucker, who's just been an unbelievable situation for him all year in Minnesota, and Evgeny Malkin. I mean, we're talking a full goal better than Austin Matthews per 60 minutes of 5-on-5. That is a lot of goals. So I think it is as much an argument as anyone. Like, I think these next 15 games mean a ton for both players.
Travis, we'll get into more Rookie of the Year talk next week when it comes based solely on analytics. I'll get your take on that. But we're out of time. Thank you so much, as always, bud.
All right, man. Take care.
That was Travis Yost from TSN.ca. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Travis Yost. So after the break, editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto, James Myrtle, joins me to talk Maple Leafs, Senators, Flames, and more. You're listening to TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, TSN 1200, and on iTunes.
Gardner, far half-boards, and a shot scores! Nylander steps off the half-boards and snaps it past the shoulder of Neuvirth, and how he didn't have any room. The third star of the game is Anderson. The first star of the game is Tyler Bozak, as the Leafs win it by a score of 4-2.
Welcome back to TSN Hockey Analytics. I'm Andy McNamara, and you're listening on TSN 1050 Toronto, TSN 1200 Ottawa. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Follow us on Twitter at TSN Analytics and myself at AndyMC81. On the line now, editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto, it is James Myrtle, and he is back from the West Coast. James, I was going to taunt you on joining us back in the cold, but I understand you'll be going to Florida in not too long, so, you know, that's tough for me, I guess.
Under 48 hours, I will be back on a plane to somewhere nice and warm. Yeah, well, I don't know what's going on with the weather here, but I'm not enjoying it.
And even you just take off.
I'm only here for a week, so I'm disappearing again. Yeah. It just turns out that way that the Leafs are going somewhere warm twice in March.
Oh, that's great. You're like, oh, I don't like this cold. I'm going to go to Florida right now. Well done, sir. I'm jealous. But anyway, let's begin with the Maple Leafs here. And we look back at the Maple Leafs' third period versus the Flyers and Red Wings. Were there positive for the Leafs, or was it another matter of just kind of holding on when you look at possession?
The possession wasn't very good, especially against Detroit. I mean, you're playing a bad possession team and the fourth worst team in the NHL. You know, I think you want a better outcome than that. The shot attempts were at even strength, were 16-10 for Detroit. And I didn't like the way the Leafs played that third period. I mean, it was really, it looked like they were going to cough it up again. And I wonder if they were playing a more potent offensive team. If they were, Philadelphia was a little bit better, but, you know, there were some breakdowns right at the end of the game. And, you know, it was funny. We had a story at The Athletic that, you know, some of the veteran players that came off the ice after that Flyers game, and they were kind of pissed off that even though they won the game, they didn't like how they won the game. And Mike Babcock didn't like the breakdown that they had when it was 6-on-5 for the Flyers. So, you know, it's the positive, obviously, is that they got the 4 points out of those two games. But the negative is that there's, you know, there's still cause for concern after both of those games.
Right, and they're still obviously very much in the hunt for that second and final wild card spot. But, okay, you get the two wins, not the way you wanted to finish them off. But you got the points, right? So as you said, can these be used as building blocks of, okay, there's frustration, but you got the victories, and maybe that can propel some good feelings coming off of their recent struggles?
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, that's what Babcock said, is that, you know, sometimes you have to win ugly to get out of a funk.
Yeah.
They were in a pretty deep funk. I mean, after that California trip, they had won only 5 of 18 games. There were a lot of things that weren't going the Leafs' way, and there was some frustration seeping in, and there was some self-doubt seeping in with the Leafs. And, you know, it's funny, you look at their analytics, and they weren't that much worse than what they were early in the year. I mean, there were a lot of things that they were still doing well. So it's a matter of the Leafs kind of believing in the process a little bit and continuing to do what they were doing and just not have as many breakdowns late in games and win more shootouts and win more games in overtimes and things like that. You know, so they by getting a couple of wins, maybe they can trust that what they were doing is going to carry them through to the end. And I look at before they beat Detroit and Philadelphia, they had to go roughly 11-7, maybe a little bit better than that to make the playoffs, to get to 92 points and make the playoffs. You win the two games, that really eases the pressure because now they only need to go 9-7.
Right.
You know, maybe 9-6-1 to get to 93 points to make the playoffs. It's a much more reasonable record. And if they can beat a struggling Carolina team tonight, all of a sudden they're getting to the point where they only need to go 500 to get into the playoffs. And that's doable for this team.
Now, James, we keep seeing Mike Babcock shift Nylander and Brown on a line with Matthews. Going forward, do you think it should be Nylander as Matthews' right winger? Like, just stick with one?
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at the data on it, Nylander has played a lot better with Matthews, which isn't surprising. But the surprising thing is that Matthews has played better with Nylander than he has with Brown. They've just a more dynamic offensive line. When Matthews has Nylander on his wing, he's at about 58% in terms of goals for percentage. So basically goal differential is 58%. When Matthews is playing with Brown, it's closer to 50%. So, you know, it doesn't sound like a huge difference, but, you know, you extrapolate that over the season and it's there. And the possession numbers when you've got Nylander and Matthews together are fantastic. You know, that line with Hyman, Matthews, Nylander is very, very good at getting control of the puck and maintaining it. And it doesn't quite have... It isn't as dynamic when you have Connor Brown out there, who's a good player and who has had good games. But I look at the kind of the mini funk that Matthews is in with not a lot of points recently, and I think you want him with as good of offensive players as you can give him and get him going again, because they're going to need Matthews to really be productive over the last 16 games.
In conversation with James Myrtle, editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto, on Twitter, at Myrtle. James, I want to get into the Ottawa Senators here. And as of Saturday afternoon, 2 points back of Montreal for first in the Atlantic. It seems like they've just kind of quietly moved up the standings and kind of hung around and are now ready to pounce for that top spot. They're relying heavily on Craig Anderson and net, but how do you compare these two? How do they stack up, the Senators and the Canadiens?
I've got Montreal slightly ahead of Ottawa, but there's been an element of both of that for these teams. You know, even since Claude Julien has gone back into Montreal, you know, Carey Price all of a sudden has come alive, and then now they're winning games. So goaltending is such a big part of both of these teams. They're going to have any success in terms of winning the division or winning in the playoffs. Goaltending is going to be a big part of it, because especially on the Ottawa side, they play a really defensive style. You know, they really rely on penalty killing, and they're not a good possession team. Ottawa is not a team that the analytics guys like. You ask anyone that comes on this show what they think of the Senators, and they're not going to rate them very highly in terms of playoff success. So, you know, they're a team that's going to have to grind out a lot of 2-1 wins. And that's what they did this week. I mean, they beat Arizona in overtime the other day, 2-1. Arizona, one of the worst teams in the league, had 41 shots on the Senators. Not an impressive victory, but Ottawa has just found a way to continue to get it done. But if you're betting on it, I would say that Montreal is going to win the division still.
And we're talking about impressive performances. Let's go out west. The Calgary Flames won 8 straight, 9-0-1 in their last 10. They have the top wildcard spot in the Western Conference. Which players have been the driving forces for the Flames?
I love that line of Tkachuk and Backlund and Frolik. I think that has been, they've been fantastic defensively. They've been very good offensively and picked up the slack with Monahan and Gaudreau not being the world beaters that they've been in the past. You know, Backlund has emerged as a Selke candidate. He's emerged as a star. I mean, he's been fantastic on the power play as well. You know, this is a guy that the stats guys have pointed to for years as having really good underlying numbers. Now he's got even more than that to show for it. And if the Flames have success in the playoffs, that Michael Backlund is going to be one of the big reasons why. And, you know, Coach Glenn Gulitzen has seen something in his game that he can really lean on this guy. He gives him such tough assignments. And the fact he's got a rookie in Matthew Tkachuk on his wing, who has played very, very well, has helped as well. So, you know, there's some nice depth up front for the Flames. There's nice depth on the back end as well, with Dougie Hamilton coming in and playing very, very well since the slow start. I like Calgary. You know, they're hot for a reason. They're not hot just because of a goaltender or something like that. This is a good team, and you might even be able to make the argument that Calgary's the best Canadian team right now.
Wow. And who would have thought we'd say that to start the year?
Yeah.
Last one for you here, James. It was a heavyweight toe-to-toe, right? We had Friday night Crosby and McDavid facing off. In your mind, and looking at the numbers, of course, how did McDavid do against Crosby, and which player impressed you the most when they were going head-to-head?
I would say McDavid got the slight edge. If you look at just the minutes that he played against Crosby, it was at even strength, it was 12 and a half minutes, including the overtime. 16 shot attempts with McDavid on the ice, 14 against McDavid when he was on the ice against Crosby. Very, very close. You look at things like scoring chances, though, and, you know, some of the other underlying numbers, and McDavid is slightly ahead, but, you know, that was a very, very impressive performance by the Penguins. I thought Marc-Andre Fleury was a star, and, you know, he's really auditioning for his next job because he can be playing somewhere else next year. And he's shown, you know, even at his age, he's still got it. And it's pretty neat seeing kind of the future of the NHL go against, I don't know if you want to call it the past, maybe the present with how good Crosby still is. And, you know, hopefully Crosby can, even though he's going to be 30 years old this summer, hopefully he can hang in there and compete for a few more scoring races and Hart trophies the rest of the way. And because Connor McDavid is certainly going to be there the next few years.
Well, and that's part of it, right? That Crosby stayed healthy, how exciting this is. The NHL needs those star matchups, those main event banners out there to say, hey, okay, we got Crosby versus McDavid. And you're right. I think more for Crosby, it's about the present. So if he can keep that going, we can see McDavid kind of grow and then the eventual passing of the torch.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely coming. I mean, McDavid is just such a dynamic, fantastic player. And it's too bad that Pittsburgh and Edmonton don't play more often. It's too bad that they're in different conferences, but it's going to be really interesting to see that progression that he makes and see if anyone can challenge McDavid. I mean, can a Matthews or an Eichel or a Laine, can they challenge McDavid for the mantle, or is he going to be kind of on an island as the best player in the game once Crosby does fade?
James, thank you so much as always, my friend. We'll do it again.
Okay. Thanks, Andy.
That was James Myrtle, editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto. If you have not checked out The Athletic Toronto yet, do it. Phenomenal product, reading, everything. It's tremendous. On Twitter, at Myrtle. Take the break. After that, Jeff Viette, managing editor of The Nation Network and site editor of The Leafs Nation, will join me. You're listening to TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, TSN 1200, and on iTunes. Welcome back to TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, TSN 1200, and on iTunes. I'm Andy McNamara. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TSN Analytics, myself at AndyMC81. On the line now, managing editor of the Nation Network and site editor for Leafs Nation. He's live in Vancouver right now at the Vancouver Hockey Analytics Conference. Jeff Viette. Jeff, how's it going?
It's going fantastic. How about you?
Doing well, my friend. So we'll get into what's going on at the conference in a few minutes. Very interested to hear about that. But you've started a very popular hashtag on Twitter, hashtag the Leafs are actually good. And they've surprised everyone this season, right? Of course, with the way the rookies have played and stepped up. Now, they have faded down the stretch. They've won two in a row, but overall have taken a step back. Even if they do miss the playoffs, should this season be viewed as a complete success from where they came from last year?
So I think in a respect, it can be seen as a success if they still don't quite make it, just because it does exceed the expectations that the majority of the fan base had, the majority of the media had. At the same time, there was a group of people who did feel that they were a team that could be in this conversation. In my own case, this is about where I expected them to be. I think that there was not enough value put into the kids at the start of the season. These were all very capable players right from the get-go. And they are basically what we thought they were. If they can squeak in, great. If they can't, it's still good. It's still huge progress in 30th. But it won't be like, oh my God, at least they got here. You're still going to be in a position where you're going to want to ask questions of what do they need to do to make the next step? What could have been done a little bit better? It's not something that you just say, okay, yeah, it's all great. But at the same time, it's still a radical difference, and it's still something to at least definitely be proud of.
Right, and from the Leafs' standpoint, for the youth, every game matters. So they're playing meaningful games, which I think is sometimes discounted.
Yeah, and that's key. Like, how long has it been since there's been a Leafs team that has played in meaningful games and deserved to be in the meaningful games?
Sure.
Like, you can look at the 2013 season, but the entire time we were all sitting there going, like, it's cool they're doing it, but it just doesn't really make much sense. This is the first full season since I was like a child where you can go and say, oh yeah, this team totally deserves to be here, and every single game matters. So the fact that we're having conversations in March about this team making the next step, it's fantastic, and it's only the start of something that's going to be really good over the next couple of years.
Yeah, much different mindset to be in. Now let's go into Morgan Rielly. He's come under some scrutiny in the past few weeks from his defensive play, from the fans, media. Even Mike Babcock has called him out a little bit. He's the de facto number one Leaf defenseman right now, right on the top pairing. Would you say the criticism of Riley is warranted as of late, or could it be a little unfair, like how Jake Gardner has come under a lot of scrutiny the last couple of years?
I think it could be both. I think in Riley's case, he's never quite gotten much criticism from the fan base, from the media. He's managed to avoid that. He's managed to be approached with kid gloves for most of his career, which is fair. I mean, when you're a younger player, you get a little bit more rope. But he's getting to that stage now as he gets closer and closer to prime age, where you want to see him make the next step. And this hasn't been a great year for him. Now, granted, there's several factors leading to that. He's the person who gets played in the toughest minutes. He gets played a lot of the toughest zone starts. There are many, many reasons why his own play, his situations work against him.
Right. Quality of defensive partner too, right?
Exactly. Though I do think a lot of Nikita Zaitsev. I think he's a solid person to have on the other side. But it has to be a combination of both. It's a guy who you want to see more out of, but you also understand the context of it. It'd be really nice if they put him in a situation where both the top two pairs were playing those same kind of tough minutes. That way, both pairs can grow as players and at the same time take a little bit of pressure off of each other. That's something I'd like to see moving forward. But in the meantime, it's nice to see that he has some pressure on him now, but you also don't want it to get too out of hand.
Right, and see how he handles it, sure. Now, another young player, of course, William Nylander, has had a great season, much like many of the rookies and youngsters. Now, and in smaller sample size, he's leading the Leaf forwards in terms of shot attempt differential. But whenever trade talks come up of, okay, to get a top-pairing defenseman or move whoever for whatever, it seems that Nylander's always the guy being dangled, the young guy who's, all right, you know what, we can part with him because we have other forwards. Is that the right move, do you think? Should Nylander be the guy who we just easily shuffle along?
Yeah, I really don't think so. I think a lot of people are looking at the Leafs as a team that's been giving up a lot of goals, and they want to make an immediate move to settle that down. But you're looking at a really, really special player in Nylander. Well, the way I like to put it is, if Marner and Matthews aren't Leafs, we're looking at William Nylander as possibly the next great Leaf since Sundin. Hmm. He's someone who we are pretty confident is going to be a star player in this league. In a lot of respects, he's already on the cusp of being a star player in this league. If we were sitting here saying, okay, well, this is a 55-point, 20-year-old rookie, we'd be so happy right now with just him. He's as good as untouchable as you can get right now. I think he's a very easy one to bring up because obviously no one's going to talk about trading Matthews, and the entire city is obviously falling in love with Mitch Marner. So he's the odd man out when you have those conversations, but I don't think that's something that you do. I think they have several other players they can move, whether it's a veteran, whether it's some of their B prospects, whether it's even moving picks down the line or looking towards free agency. There are so many other routes that they can go to plug those holes that I don't think you move a borderline star forward that's 20 years old. I think that's crazy talk.
In conversation with Jeff Viette, managing editor of The Nation Network and site editor of The Leafs Nation on Twitter, at Jeff Viette. So, as we said off the top, you are live in Vancouver right now for the Vancouver Hockey Analytics Conference. I got to go to the Ottawa one last year, which was a tremendous experience. Got to meet many of the guests that we've had on the show over the last few years face-to-face. Tons of fun. So, what are your expectations for the event? Because it's just started up today.
Honestly, like when I show up, I'm not numb. Definitely not anywhere close to being one of the smartest people in the room. I just like to take in everything that everyone has to say and see what I can learn from it. There's a lot of really, really bright people here, whether they're here speaking or just to soak in some of their own knowledge. And I just like to be in the background and see what's going on. And it's definitely a fun little experience. This is the second year that they've done it here. Last year's was really, really good. This one we just started up about an hour ago, so there's still plenty of stuff left on the agenda. But I expect it's going to be a good one.
So who are some of the speakers that are going to be up there today?
There's a list that I don't have on me right now, but it's a really solid, well-rounded group. A lot of people that you see that are regulars on hockey social media. A couple names that don't quite stick out to me, but that's almost more exciting because you get to hear some fresh perspectives.
Yeah.
It's just a really, really nice group. There's, I think, 10 or so different speakers that are coming up, and I think a lot of if it's anything like last year, you'll be able to see video or some sort of recap on the website as well. So
you're
going to be able to find this information after the fact.
Good. I was going to ask if they were going to record and air that, so that's great. What are some of the new advances that we've seen in the analytics movement that are going to be discussed and that you'll be having a chance to look at over the next day?
I think a lot of it is just like kind of zeroing in on some of the data that we work with as it is, like things like score effects, like quality of competition, small coaching strategy things. I think that's a huge focus over the past couple of months. You've been seeing people get more into the X's and O's of why these numbers are important, where you apply them on the ice. And I think that's where you're seeing most of the topics head towards today.
And last one for you here, Jeff. Overall, you're looking big picture here for hockey analytics. How do you feel that analytics in the community is being accepted into the mainstream?
It really depends on which way you put it there. I think as far as a media perspective, we're getting a lot closer.
Yeah.
Where you're starting to see people integrate it more into their work, because it doesn't just have to be, okay, well, here's a spreadsheet.
Exactly.
That was a big misconception in the beginning. And I guess it's because people weren't quite delivering their message in the right way to start. But now that there's a greater understanding of where this applies, you're seeing people blend it into their work more. When that happens, you get fans who understand it a little bit easier once it's easier to consume. And I think that starts to trickle down and go across. With teams, there's still the sky's the limit. Hockey's still kind of in the infancy of what we're going to be able to do with a lot of this information and what information we can even get. But I think as far as fan and media perspective, it's come light years in the last couple of years.
No doubt. Jeff, enjoy the conference, and thank you so much for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was Jeff Viette, Managing Editor of the Nation Network and Site Editor of the Leafs Nation on Twitter, at Jeff Viette. After the break, we'll wrap things up with Heroes and Zeros and the top analytics storylines of the week with Scott Cullen of TSN.ca. You're listening to TSN Hockey Analytics here on TSN 1050, TSN 1200, and on iTunes.
3.2 seconds to go, first period. Islanders lead 1-0 from the faceoff. It comes to the top of the left circle. Vanek swings it across. Edinburgh scores! With no time left on the clock, they're going to have to take a look at this one.
Oh, what a big, big play for Detroit.
Here's Tkachuk now. Whatever the Canadians line up the left wing side. He cuts in, drops it. Giordano hits the goal post, and it goes in!
What a shot by the captain! Mark Giordano rips one right off the goal post and into the back of the Canadians' net. And it's 1-0 Flames!
Back to wrap up another edition of TSN Hockey Analytics here on TSN 1050 Toronto, TSN 1200 Ottawa. Get us on iTunes and SoundCloud. I'm Andy McNamara. Follow us on Twitter at TSN Analytics, myself at AndyMC81. In his usual spot, it is TSN.ca hockey columnist Scott Cullen. Scotty, how's it going?
Awesome, Andy. How are you today?
Doing well, buddy. Doing well. So as we usually do, let's kick it off with Heroes and Zeros.
It's time for the best and worst of the NHL this week. Hockey Analytics, Heroes and Zeros, with Scott Cullen and Andy McNamara.
Okay, Scotty, and your first hero, Henrik Zetterberg.
Well, not a lot of good news out of Detroit this year, but there's a little bit of positivity from Henrik Zetterberg, who has 24 points in his past 19 games, with 53% possession over that time. And what really stands out, because he's on a bad Detroit team, is that his relative possession is like plus 8.7%. So he's kind of the one bright light they have in Detroit. And what really stands out in addition is that he leads the old brigade scoring race. You know how we look at the rookie scoring race?
Sure.
Well, how about the guys over 35 years old? Henrik Zetterberg leads them with 55 points ahead of Radim Verbata and Henrik Sedin and others.
And your second here, we got Mark Giordano. What a nice bounce back year he's had. I know we question the relevance of plus minus overall, but he's a plus 18 compared to a minus 5 last season. And the Flames are as red hot as you can be right now.
Well, yeah, the Flames have been a great place to go finding heroes
lately.
And Giordano is, you know, their ace on defense. He has 8 points in the past 10 games with possession numbers up around 59%. But also, because they're winning all those games, that possession number, when it's score and venue adjusted, ends up over 61%. And so, you know, Giordano is playing like a number one, you know, Norris Trophy type defenseman for the Calgary Flames. And he's a big reason why they're having this success right now.
That's right. And we should say, if you hear a little sound in the background, Scotty is playing Super Dad. He's got his son there who is chirping his picks for Heroes. Love it. Scotty, let's go to your zeros here. Brandon Sutter starts it off.
Yeah, Brandon Sutter, the Vancouver Canucks. You know, the Canucks, you know, they signed him to this extension after they got him from Pittsburgh, and it seemed ill-advised at the time, but they're committed to the idea that Brandon Sutter is going to be a long-term fixture there. Well, in his past nine games, he has 1 point, possession number under 39%. And, you know, yeah, this is only a small portion of the season, but boy, if I'm, you know, investing in somebody to be the long-term future of the team, I would like them to be doing better than that.
Another poor signing by the Canucks. Who knew? And finally, Ryan McDonagh.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise there is that, you know, McDonagh is sort of the one bright light on the Rangers' blue line for the most part. We have all kinds of time to criticize, you know, Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi and so on over the years. But Ryan McDonagh has 2 points in the past nine games, and his possession number is down around 42%, which is, you know, for McDonagh, who is, as I say, the one bright light on that Rangers' blue line, that kind of stands out in a bad way.
So that was Heroes and Zeros. By the way, Scotty and I have our weekly Heroes and Zeros video on TSN.ca, which you can catch every Monday in the early afternoon. Follow him on Twitter at TSN Scott Cullen, myself at AndyMC81, and we'll tweet out the link and all that with new heroes and new zeros. So, Scotty, we talked a little bit about the Flames already. The Ottawa Senators, I chatted with James Mertle about it earlier in the show, quietly, very almost sneakily, have moved up the standings, 2 points back as of Saturday from the Montreal Canadiens. And you're saying, hey, Erik Karlsson leads the Sens surge. Probably not surprising, but, man, he keeps doing it.
Yeah, and you know what? The interesting thing to me is the narrative on Erik Karlsson this year is that all he's learned how to play under Guy Boucher and much more well-rounded game because he leads the league in block shots. But it's interesting is that, you know, the Senators gave up fewer shots, you know, and unblocked shots at even strength with Karlsson on the ice last year than they do this year, because last year Karlsson was, you know, driving play like few other defensemen in the league. And, you know, you don't have to play as much defense when you keep taking it to the offensive zone.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the one angle that I think is, you know, being overblown when they're talking about Karlsson. But at the same time, he's also been elevating his offensive game. He started out a little bit slowly this year, but has a point per game in the past 44. And so when I did my three-quarter awards, I had Karlsson as a runner-up for the Norris behind Brent Burns because I think Burns is having a historically great season on the blue line. But, you know, I'm getting lots of feedback from Ottawa from people who are going, how do you ignore Erik Karlsson? How do you? And I'm like, I'm not ignoring Erik Karlsson. He should have won it last year.
Right.
And so I'm, you know, I'm all on board for how well Erik Karlsson is playing, even if I'm not going to push him for the Norris this year.
Right, just sometimes you have someone who's playing better, as Burns has been overall this season. So in conversation with TSN.ca hockey columnist Scott Cullen on Twitter, at TSN Scott Cullen, and get his work, statistically speaking, Monday to Friday on TSN.ca. Scotty, we had the GM meetings down in Boca Raton, Florida. It seemed like a nice vacation, and that's what the GMs were doing, because not a lot happened.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I don't know whether the fans really expect major changes out of the GMs, but I think people in the media who, you know, who are trying to pay close attention, that they might expect a little bit more. That, you know, this is a league that, you know, can't find ways to create more offense, and then you go to these GM meetings and they don't do anything to address the issue. And it's, you know, like you could do something to change the offside rule, or you know, make penalties last for two minutes or something, like do something to address the, you know, the offense issue. And they didn't. And I can't say I'm surprised. That's sort of, you know, par for the course when they go to these things. But, you know, if you're a fan and you're looking for reasons to get excited, then, you know, these GM meetings didn't give you any reason to think, oh, the new and improved NHL is going to be any kind of difference from what we see today.
Well, and what about the expansion protected list that will not be made public? It seems like they're missing a huge marketing opportunity here.
Imagine. And they may walk this one back. Like, I know Pierre LeBrun first reported that, and I have 100% belief that Pierre was right in his report. But then all of a sudden things started to come out after the fact. It sounded like the league recognized that, you know, maybe keeping the protected list secret isn't the best idea. There are plenty of people on Twitter who are, you know, not happy about it in large respect, because what it does is it protects the general managers, right? And you know, and that's, you know, admirable, I guess, if you want your GMs to not face too much criticism, but you're doing it at the expense of a fan base and people who are interested in, okay, how is my team valuing these players? And, you know, what players would be best for this new team to pick? And, you know, the league is, you know, by, if they're going to go on the decision of keeping it private, they're sort of abandoning that and saying, you know, too bad to the fans. And, you know, when you're the NHL, I don't think you're in the position to be saying too bad to the fans. you should maybe listen to them every once in a while. And when you have this opportunity of a way to, you know, generate interest, I mean, you're talking about, you know, generating hockey interest in mid-June, you know, that would be worthwhile. But I guess, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I think, there's going, if the league doesn't, you know, release them, I imagine insiders will be able to secure that info and, you know, we'll still have the players who are available and so on. I just, it stinks when you know that the league is kind of making this decision at the expense of the fans.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. And the Olympics, again, come up and typically, speaking of ridiculous, right? Jakub Voracek said as much. Pessimism, but has anything else really come out about the participation in the 2018 Olympics?
Well, I mean, the way the NHL handles it, they're pessimistic about the Olympics until they aren't.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And it's kind of the same way they deal with expansion and all these things. Well, no, we're not looking at expanding, and then all of a sudden they are. And
so, it's like, hey, we're expanding.
You know, they're going to, you know, talk down the Olympics as much as possible, probably try and use it as some sort of leverage play against the players because that's what they always do. But we'll see whether or not that it affects anything in the future. Like I would say I'm more pessimistic about NHLers going to the 2018 Olympics than I have been in any of the past ones, which is kind of unfortunate because, you know, all the players like to go. And it, again, this is the league doing something that I don't really see in the best interest of the fans. But, you know, it seems to be a consistent theme here.
Yeah. Hey, who cares about the fans? We only need them to pay for everything. All right. Anyway, Scotty, great stuff. I will talk to you on Monday. That was TSN.ca hockey columnist Scott Cullen. Get him on Twitter at TSN Scott Cullen. And remember, check out TSN.ca Monday afternoon for our Heroes and Zeros video edition. And we'll again tweet that out at TSN Scott Cullen, myself at AndyMC81. That'll do it. Great show, everybody. Thank you so much to our guests. So, for producer Joe Narsa and Steve Eliopoulos, I'm Andy McNamara. You've been listening to TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, TSN 1200, and on iTunes.